Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Portland Housing Bureau Bond Oversight Committee, our Zoom platform and remote meeting, kind of the new normal. It is April 13th. It is a little after 9:30, and we're going to get going. This is a little different and different for many of us. And so let me just kind of take us through a little bit of our protocols and how we are going to do our best to make this an effective meeting today. Now, since it's new, that means you can expect the things to happen when something is new. We're going to have a little pause. We're going to have a little misstep. That's okay. We'll get through it together. Because of that, my ask is that you be patient and be respectful in our process. We're learning together, and we've been rushed into a new normal, which can have its own benefit. I want to make sure that you take a moment to look at your screen and examine it. You will notice for most of us, it's in the lower left of your screen. You will notice the space that has a microphone icon and you have a video icon. If there is a red dash through it, that means your mic is muted. And so you will need to click on that in order to speak. If there is a red slash or dash through your video, that means your video is also not on. So if you want to be seen, you can click that video. And I'd love to look at your face. It's always good to see who we're talking to. So you can click your video. You can have your video up with your mic muted. And or you can have your mic unmuted with your video darkened. So important to know. And when you mute or unmute, we ask you to introduce yourself before you begin to speak. Even though many of you, we know, I'm Dr. Stephen Holt, and I have the privilege of being the facilitator of our process. Many of you, we know, and you may know one another, but for the sake of the recording, it is good to capture that. When you are not speaking, I'm going to ask you to mute your microphone, and so that way we don't get background noise. At the end of our time today, we will have opportunity for chat for the public testimony, and the public testimony will be housed in the chat space. And so again, at the bottom of your screen, about the middle of the screen, you'll see participants, chat, share screen, etc. Well, if you click that chat icon, you can type in your thought or your request. I will do my best to capture and read what is said and then give an opportunity for response. So, in light of that, let's get ready to do what we do today. What's the next slide? Welcome again to today's time. We're going to do a roll call, and then we will get going. And our roll call will consist of all of the Bond Oversight Committee members, if you will go first. And then we will have Portland Housing Bureau staff identify yourself as you're here. So, Bond Oversight Committee members.
Susan Emmons, Bond Oversight Committee member.
Annalisa Keller, Bond Oversight Committee member.
Alan Lazo, Bond Oversight Committee member.
Okay, I think that's all of our Bond Oversight that are with us. Good to see you. Portland Housing Bureau.
Mike Johnson, finance and accounting manager.
Morning, Mike.
Good morning, Shannon Callahan, Portland Housing Bureau.
Good morning, Shannon.
Good morning, Molly Rogers, Portland Housing Bureau.
Good morning, Molly.
Good morning, Jill Chen, Portland Housing Bureau.
Hi, Jill.
Good morning, this is Tanya Wolfersberger, Portland Housing Bureau. I'm also your share screen host, so excuse me if I have little glitches like I just did.
We're learning and growing together. Hi, Ty. Any other PHP staff?
Hi, Siobhan Beto with Portland Housing Bureau.
Thank you.
Jesse Connor, Portland Housing Bureau. Here is an audience member.
Morning.
Jamila Dozier, Portland Housing Bureau.
Good morning.
Good morning. This is Jennifer Chang, Portland Housing Bureau.
Good morning, Jennifer. Make sure that you aren't muted if you're speaking. Make sure to unmute.
Good morning. This is Antoinette Pietka, the Portland Housing Bureau.
Good morning, Antoinette. We have a few more, at least that I see.
Morning, Elizabeth Hilt, Portland Housing Bureau.
Good morning, Elizabeth.
This is Stacy Jeffries, also with the Portland Housing Bureau.
Good morning, good morning.
This is Michelle Helm with the Portland Housing Bureau.
Wonderful. I don't know if Matthew dropped off or not. Matthew, you there? All right, well, we will begin. As you see, the agenda for today, we're going to do our best to stay online and on time with the activity of today for the Oversight Committee information. Our first area then is the Portland Housing Bonds updates. Financial audit, BOC annual report, project progress dashboard, and expenditure report. Several people are participating in that, so I will turn it over. Who's up for the financial audit?
Well, that would be me, Dr. Holt, Mike Johnson, Portland Housing Bureau Finance and Accounting Manager. Back on March 5th, we provided the BOC with the both the audit report and the Bureau's response. And I'm just going to touch on some of the highlights of the response today, unless there's any initial questions from the BOC. Okay, not hearing any, I'll start right in. So the initial, one of the challenges we had with this audit is it occurred right as we were in the midst of switching from our acquisition model to our gap financing model. So as you're all familiar with audits, they are backward looking. So a lot of the things we're talking about here occurred over the last couple of years and don't necessarily reflect what we're doing right now, but we'll go over them anyway. So the first finding was regarding formalizing, documenting if expenses were bond eligible. And what we explained to the auditors is that we had used a very conservative approach due to the acquisition nature of the projects. That was create a pretty narrow window of opportunity to capitalize costs, and you would have with a capital project that goes on, construction project that would go on for many months, if not years. Now, the new gap financing model we're using, it's basically using a very innovative approach. We discussed with you a few meetings ago this program delivery fee we're looking at using. And we're continuing to work with House of Management and Finance of the City and Bond Council, making sure that both that fee and our gap financing disbursements tie in with both the bond measure definitions, the state constitution, generally accepted accounting principles, and utilizes a certification process both from the Bureau and our development partners. In fact, we met as recently as last week on this. The primary monitoring of that eligibility will be by the finance and accounting team in the Bureau with those utilizing the certifications that I was mentioning previously. So the second finding was regarding our accounting procedures. We agreed with them that the structure used in the first phase of the bond was overly complicated. And under the gap financing model, we simplified that structure and reached out to other bureaus for advice, and we've incorporated that into our procedures. Our accounting procedures, for the most part, really don't differ from what the city does, but what OMF lays down is citywide accounting procedures. We follow those. And really where our procedures kick in is where we're tracking program delivery costs and the project disbursements. And we've got procedures for those drafted and are actually working off of those drafts right now. There was a third finding regarding strengthening procedures for evaluating the financial feasibility of properties prior to completing the purchase. And this was really formalizing the requirement for a appraisal. The city doesn't currently have a citywide requirement for appraisals. They've indicated it's a best business practice, and that is what they see as policy. But we're in the Bureau is in the process of formalizing our appraisal practice internally. So the Bureau will have a policy that deals with those appraisals. Would note that we did have appraisals on each of the acquisitions we did for the bond. The last finding, and this will actually involve some feedback from BOC, was the auditors felt that the financial reporting could be improved. What we do is we provide monthly budget and actual reports to PHB management by project and funding source. We also will provide more detail of that quarterly to Bureau management. In the first phase of the implementation of the bond, as you know, the nature of the expenditures were pretty intermittent. We could go two or three quarters without really spending any funds because we were, in the middle of due diligence or even selection on projects. Obviously, now in the gap financing model that we're using, we're going to be reporting quarterly as we did in February and as we are today because we've got expenditures going on a regular basis. So that's basically what went on with the audit, and I'm happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you very much. Bond Oversight members, any questions? And initially I talked about us using the chat feature, but I think we'll be okay if you just unmute and share. Go for it.
Hey, Dr. Holt, I have a question for Mike.
Go ahead.
So Mike, there was one point at which you were saying that you needed some feedback from the BOC, but I didn't quite catch what that point was. Was it something about a format for reporting? Is that what it was?
Basically, we provide a quarterly expenditure report to you last meeting. We'll provide one for you a few slides later. And maybe at that time, if there's some additional information you're looking for beyond what we're providing in the memo that we're providing each quarter, we're always willing to provide you with whatever financial information you need. So That's kind of what we're looking for. There's something you don't think you're getting, just let us know. We're happy to provide it to you.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, so it's the attachment that we had for the memo for the expenditure report, and we'll talk more about that later. Yeah, great.
Correct.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Susan and Elise? Question?
Yeah. I don't have a question. I understand. Seems fine.
Perfect. Thanks, Mike. We will move on to the next item. Appreciate it.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm really excited to talk to you about the BOC annual report. Hopefully, all of you received the 2019 progress report that we published and distributed in, I think, end of February, early March. That copy is on our website that you can download. Yes, Dr. Holt.
I hate to interrupt you, but if you would introduce yourself.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I'm Tanya Wolfersberger. I'm with PHB, and I work primarily on the housing bond program. So thank you, Dr. Holt, for that reminder. Yeah, so we're really excited and really proud about this report. I think it highlights a lot of the progress that was made in 2019, particularly the bond opportunity solicitation that awarded 9 new projects to be developed for under the bond program and meeting or exceeding many of our goals that we set out to do under the policy framework. So all of you should have received a copy of that. If not, you can go on to one of our websites right now and download that copy and take a look at that. We are preparing to bring this report to City Council as part of the charter for the BOC is to come to Council every year and present a report. Many of you did that with us last April. So in preparation for that City Council report, we drafted an addendum memo to go along with the progress report. The draft memo was sent out to BOC members last month for review and feedback. So hopefully you all remember receiving that, and I received feedback from several of you ready to go for that. So the next step is really to submit to Council. Given our current circumstances, we are postponing the Council date, the live Council date that we had scheduled for April 22nd. That will be postponed just until we can actually come together and be with each other in person to celebrate the successes of the program. So right now our plan is just to submit these documents to Council electronically, and then we will hold off on a live report to Council until further notice. So I wanted to just present that update to the Oversight Committee and get any kind of questions or feedback or concerns about that.
Thank you, Tanya. Appreciate it. And I think what I'll do is I'll just kind of call you by name. So I'll begin with you, Alan. Any comments, questions?
I don't, except Tanya, I'm looking for, did you email out the final version or the version? I know I have the draft, but I'm not sure. And it wasn't part of the packet, right? So I'm just not sure which piece is.
We did not put it in the packet. I can check and see. I believe we sent on the 20th, but I'll check and see if that was the final. It was pretty much the final draft, I think, that we had sent out.
Oh, and a version on the 20th. Okay, let me look at my emails and I'll look at that. Okay. Otherwise, yeah, that's. I don't have any questions. Thanks.
Susan, comment, question.
Yeah, I did receive it. I thought it was very thorough. I liked that there were some profiles of individuals included. I think that makes it really strong. I mean, I think it's a strong report. And if we ever get a chance to go to City Council, I'd love to be part of that if you need that. So yeah, good work.
Thank you. Annalise?
Just ditto to everything Susan said. I read it. It's really exciting. I wish we could present it, but totally understand why we are holding off and excited for whenever that day comes that we get to go and show all the hard work you guys have done, this community's done.
Thank you, Bond Oversight Committee. Thank you, Tanya. Appreciate it.
This is Molly really fast. I'm wondering, would it be possible to pull the progress report up on the screen? I don't know if that would be easy to do technologically or whether we can do it later or just go through the packet. I'm not sure what we're capable of with our Zoom.
I can work on that. you might lose the PowerPoint slides for a moment, but we can try to do that. Or folks can download it from the website too and open it up that way.
Thanks, Tanya.
Okay, shall we move on to the next item within our section?
Hi folks, this is Jill Chen, Housing Investments and Portfolio Preservation Manager. And I'll talk a little bit about the dashboard, and you should have received the sort of two-pager that lists out all the projects and key sort of information about the projects. So these are our 12, that is the bonds. Ellington, of course, is already acquired, and East Burnside is new construction. So those two are complete, what we would call complete. Out of the 10 remaining projects, they're all still in pre-development stage. And we have pre-development loans on 6 of them. The 4 that's still in the process of being evaluated for pre-development loans are Cathedral Village and Annaman. And both of those are targeted for this Thursday. And then also Westwind and Prescott, which is gonna come, we believe, hopefully, in May. Early May. So I think when you saw the dashboard, you'll note that everything is still in green, which is great, especially in this environment. We really like it when it's all green. And we have the first project that's targeted to go into what we call financial close is going to be third quarter 2020. And that is 115th and Division. And then we'll have 4 more projects targeting close by the end of this year. And the balance will close in the first half of 2021. So as a reminder, these projects usually take between 12 to 18 months for pre-development. And then the construction itself won't happen. It'll take another 12 to 18 months. So we're looking at construction really breaking ground end of this year and most of them early next year. So I think we are looking pretty strong and pretty good and very pleased with all the projects. Any questions so far? Okay. So I think that's it. And if you have no questions, then we will move forward.
Annalise, I will begin with you. We'll go backward. There's any comment or thought?
I like it. I didn't have any questions. I will say I really appreciated the dashboard. I know we had talked about it previously, and I think you had shown us an example of it, of what it was going to kind of look like previously. And when I opened it up in my email last week, I was like, oh, this is so easy. Green, green, green. Like, I had everything that was, it was, yeah. So thank you for that, because it was easy to read and to digest and to understand. All the kind of components and where everything was. So just want to say thank you and no questions.
Thank you.
Susan, let's go to you. Thank you, Annalise.
I had a question from a community person who I ran into yesterday in the Magnolia Trail up in the Arboretum, asking me if because of coronavirus, I thought that any of these projects would be delayed. And I said I had absolutely no idea what the answer was to that.
Great question, Susan, and that is something we are looking at very, very closely. In the bond projects, for the 10 of them, they're right now in pre-development, so it's still moving forward with the architects, the owners, and sort of the construction design and permitting process. And I think we are in the process of looking to see if that process of just the permitting might slow down, but we're hopeful it won't. In the projects where we're in construction, and actually it's none of the bond projects, in the construction, those that are in construction using other funds, we have found that there has been some impact. The biggest impact is the delays, and they're primarily in the smaller projects where the developer hasn't been able to get maybe the materials or the subcontractors or some other issues related to the sequencing of the construction, because they're still trying to respect the 6 feet. So those projects that are in construction, we are seeing a little bit of a delay. I'm not sure if this will happen for the bonds yet. Does that help address some of your questions?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's a very hard question to answer at this time. There are a lot of unknowns, but I said I thought as much as possible we'd be going ahead. Yeah, I mean, we see other construction going on, so yeah. Yeah, that does help. Thank you.
It has been a great thing, I think, for our affordable housing developers, and to see that the construction has not stopped, meaning it's still allowed, even though we're staying at home.
Thank you, Susan. Appreciate that. Alan, comment.
Thanks, Dr. Holt. Hey, Jill. You said, and I didn't quite catch all the whole bit, but that 30th and Powell is in a different phase than some of the other ones, but the development phase on the dashboard is listed as pre-development. I think it was about the loan status or something. Is that right?
3000 Powell is similar to the other 9 bond projects. It's still in pre-development. And actually, Amanda Saul and the Home Forward team is online because they're going to be making a presentation about some of the new developments on the project. So it is also, like the other 9 projects, in pre-development. The only ones that are not in pre-development, meaning complete, is the Ellington and East Burnside, because those were part of the older model.
Got it. Okay, I thought I heard something different about 30th and Powell. All right, thank you.
Okay.
Jill, thanks. Appreciate it. Wonderful. Let's go to our next item, which I believe is the expenditure report.
All right, it's back to me. So really just 2 changes from back in February. We spent a little bit more money on program development. So there's been a, continued spending there. Doesn't change the graph because that's all within the program delivery allowance we have for the bond. In terms of bond project commitments, we've had a change where there's been money that's come out of the reserve amount of $22 million. $4.5 million was moved up into the 3000 Powell project. Now that'll be discussed in the next section with we talk about the Powell project specifically. But those are really the only 2 changes we've seen since February.
Excellent. Susan, any comment? Question? You're muted, remember. If you unmute.
Sorry. No, I don't have any questions. It seems clear. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Annalise?
No questions. This is great. Thank you.
Alan?
Thanks, Dr. Holt. Yeah, I think this looks great. Mike, I'm wondering if, so I'm assuming that this expenditure report is the idea here is to tell us what the total amount expended on each project is. Is that correct?
The total amount of bond funds, correct.
Okay. And I don't know if it would be helpful or not. I haven't thought much through this, but in other financial reports, there are time periods that are involved or assigned to these. I don't know if that would actually be helpful for us to not or not. I haven't thought much about it. But for instance, one of the things you said, and there's actually a note here about the increase in program delivery costs, right? If I'm looking at that right, it's I don't know if that accelerated or not. I guess that's what you said, that we had an acceleration of the 7% allowance in the one quarter.
It'd be an acceleration. Actually, we just continued really at the same level we had the previous quarter. So really what we're seeing now is the staff time, as Jill mentioned, folks working on pre-development phases of the projects and even before the pre-dev phases. So it's really just the staff time and the cost related to that staff time we're seeing now, as opposed to what we would have seen in the previous model, where after an acquisition was completed, the money sent, then there really wasn't any delivery costs that were capitalizable and therefore bond eligible at that point. So where we used to see those ups and downs in the delivery costs, now we see more of a steady burn on that cost.
Got it. Yeah, which also, again, and I'm assuming you all have this somewhere else, right? And so it's that balance for us of how much information do we actually need to see. You've got it laid out. So you've got, I'm assuming, sort of cash flow, budget to actual pieces that you're watching over that help develop all these pieces. So you can see over time whether or not a project is ahead or behind where it should be on expenses, or the developers have that.
Yes, that's correct. We work very closely with Jill's team. For example, right now what we're getting from Jill's team is updated schedules on where projects are at and where they're expecting to spend down schedules are. So right now the focus on most of the projects is spend down on pre-development. Though we have projects that are starting to warm up for third quarter of this year, that'll be fiscal year 2021, and we'll actually need to start lining up how much bond funds we need to disburse next fiscal year. So that's an ongoing process that we use with Jill's team and the bond team in general.
Okay. So I think we'd be more likely to see any impacts like that on the dashboard report, actually, when I think about it, right? That's where we would see a potential project that either behind schedule or behind budget, rather than this expenditures report just kind of gives a total expenditures by project from the bond.
Right. I can't remember if we've got a spot on the dashboard that actually covers the spend down to what we predicted. There's a lot of fluidity that we see in spend down on projects for a couple of reasons. One, obviously, construction cycles. And the second is what money that's in the project needs to get spent first. So, could potentially see on one of these projects, if the bond funds didn't go in first, that even though the project is well under construction, the Bureau hasn't spent any bond funds on it yet. Or you could see the bond funds go in first, and you'd see maybe the bond funds all get spent while the project's only two-thirds finished. So there's going to be some variation of that, there where the Bureau's money getting spent may not be in sequence with the schedule of the project, which may not be a problem at all. The project may be completely on track. It's just when our money goes in.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Great. Thank you. Yeah. I don't think that we'd want to see that much information.
I understand.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Great discussion. Appreciate it. I think we covered everything in that particular section. Unless there's anything left over that I missed. All right, we will move forward to proposed criteria for new bond investments. I believe, Molly, that's you.
Good morning, everyone. Molly Rogers here. I'm going to talk to you guys about the memo related to criteria and process for increasing bond investments for already awarded projects in your packet. See here. And just to give a little bit of background, when we initially award funds to projects, those projects are generally in a really early stage of design schematics and financing assumptions. And so they go through, once they get awarded, they then go through a process of refinement over the course of, you know, 12 to 18 months. And they talk with their architects and they further refine their design. And then they talk to land use planners and they understand the constraints of their land. And they get a better sense of what's required based on code or what's required from other, say, infrastructure bureaus. This can change the project sometimes in terms of total developable space and could potentially mean more investments in things like parking, active use of commercial ground floor, roads, right-of-way improvements, and really other city public benefits than they had initially assumed. It could also mean there could be also other opportunities that arise that come from applying, say, recent code code changes. And this could is an example of times, for example, we've recently adopted something called Better Housing by Design, and these came from some affordable housing bonuses. And these opportunities can actually increase the number of units, affordable housing units, we can build on our already awarded sites. So in our fiduciary role, we understand that things can change over time, but we want to be clear with our development partners how we will evaluate these requests with them. This comes up from time to time. So we're wanting to be really proactive and really clear of what criteria we will apply to any request going forward. And these are requests for either additional resources of bond funds or a change in the unit mix. So they're in the really early stage right now in design process, and this is when those really time-sensitive decisions need to get made, because that will have a ripple effect through the whole project. And so what we're presenting to you today is a process and the criteria by which we would like the developers to come in, and we want to get your feedback on that criteria. First of all, we need to ensure that the prereqs are made. This is what you see on the slide here. These are for really, we're only going to be entertaining any additional investments from projects that weren't already at the maximum caps. As you may recall, we had a subsidy cap for new construction at $150,000 per unit, and for acquisition rehab at $100,000 per of subsidy per unit. And so really we're not departing from these caps at all. We are essentially saying if you came in less than that and you can make a case that you meet one of these criteria, then we will at least look at the request and evaluate it for cost effectiveness, really. So if you go into the next slide. Thank you. Here are some of the proposed criteria we're looking at. So we're looking at projects that we would ask those developers to come in and explain how their project meets one or more of these criteria. Once they do that, they have to also revise their costing, their performas, and any other documentations that show what this could mean for the project. So the first criteria we're proposing is called project feasibility and or urgency. So sometimes there are projects with extraordinary site costs that was really could render the project infeasible. These are the most common examples of this is unforeseen environmental remediation costs,
just one example. We have a project that happens to be on a former landfill. And as the process goes through the different phases of environmental reviews, is when we get a bigger, better sense of what that remediation costs will be. Sometimes we have to take a look at that and think about the cost benefit of moving forward versus not letting the project move forward. There's other opportunity, what we call opportunity losses. When you have things, you have, for example, expiring land purchase options for adjacent parcels, where you want to increase density potential due to zoning changes, and we want or look at leveraging increased density, particularly in high opportunity areas or locations. So this could be an example of you have a, there's a property next door, comes up for sale. Maybe it's a better use to put the two together in terms of the use of space, community livability, opportunities for right-of-ways, density, maybe you can get larger bedroom sizes. Another example could be, like I mentioned before, better housing by design. You can really build more units on the site, and it's an opportunity to increase that density without having to think about a phase two of that project, especially if the units, the number of units you can increase don't necessitate, wouldn't be enough for another, a whole new project to be financed. That's another great example. And another example could be, let's say a project is waiting for other resources to come in and they're applying for those resources, competitive resources, and what if they're not awarded those funds and they have to wait another year? You know, is there a cost benefit of waiting for that whole year in terms of construction and site holding costs, or is the gap not that much and it's worth putting some investment into to get today to move the project forward? In terms of that, we tend to look at cost benefit analyses and look at net present value of waiting, waiting for that time period or putting that investment in today. So I'm actually gonna pause, I think, at criteria number one and see if you guys have any additional things you would want us to take a look at.
And so we will do what we've been doing. We'll just go name by name by name. Alan, you are up to go first.
Thanks, Molly. This is kind of overall, and I don't know, these are numbered, but I'm assuming that there's not a priority by based on the numbers. It's not like the first number one is the top priority. It's an evaluation that you all are going to do based on a lot of different factors. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. So it's really a preponderance of, are you meeting all the overarching goals? And it really does come down to, are we going to be able to get more units per our bond goals? And are we going to be able to do it in a more cost-effective manner with the investments? There are, and I would say the third overarching component is, will the project be able to move, not be able to move forward otherwise? So those are the, I would say that would probably be the greatest. If you want to talk about weight, we're not thinking in terms of specific weights here though, but not moving the project forward is significant and something we take very seriously. And we like to work with our partners and they're very creative and adapting to new issues all the time. It's just, there are sometimes moments when, you can't move the project forward otherwise. But in general, we're applying a lens of, are we increasing goals that we set out, and are we doing it or increasing the livability of those sites, and are we getting efficiencies at the same time? Obviously, we can't accommodate every request. There's definitely not a, there's, you know, scarce resources, and we have to take these one at a time.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm wondering if there's a way to, in the memo or however this gets applied to, let's see. So when I read further, just to express that kind of that overall concept to folks, so it doesn't look like there's a priority rank. But I agree. Yeah, when you look at number one, it's like, yeah, if the project's going to die, that seemed important to deal with. as well as the other pieces that are there. Thank you.
Thank you, Helen. Appreciate it. Annalise.
Yes, these are great, Molly. Thank you. I had a question. How many of the projects aren't currently utilizing the full maximum subsidy?
If we look at the dashboard, we could take a look at that right away.
Or just like a rough estimate. I mean, I don't need like, are most of them using it? Are most of them not using it?
I would say a third, but I would have to ask Jill offhand. But no, I think the average came in at around more like 120 per unit. And that's a blend between new construction and ACT rehab. So at least half, more than half, I think, are less than the subsidy caps.
Okay.
We can refer to the dashboard really fast when I get a chance. So.
No, you're fine. I was just curious if you would only be eligible, like how many projects would actually be eligible for additional funding. And then I did wonder if the kind of project feasibility urgency is, as in your conversation with Alan, is, you know, of a slightly higher priority. What happens if there is a project who is already at its maximum subsidy level? But there's a project feasibility thing that comes up. That's more of an open-ended question, but if you don't have to be like, and here's what we would do. But I just wondered about that.
We've continued to signal that we are not open to increasing our investments beyond our subsidy caps that we've done. We are working with partners in these very early stages, even now, understanding the full extent of where they're seeing the numbers. We're asking them to apply for other resources.
Yep.
We've got one we know that wants to apply for LIFT,
yep,
which is a state competitive resource. There are other pockets of funds out there. And so we are going to continue to see with them and understand that sometimes it may make slightly different choices for their project than they would if they had just unlimited resources. So we're having to stick to that right now.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. And is it, just to kind of clarify, it's kind of first come, first serve, but it's kind of like as different opportunities or issues arise, different projects might approach you guys about additional funding. Is that, I just want to make sure I'm understanding that.
Yeah. Okay. So the timing of this is we wanted to give everyone a chance, at least an opportunity with the process sort of at the same time, because they're generally in new construction, you're in this design period. And these are when these crucial decisions are getting made. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want to just have a process that only some people knew about and not others.
Yep.
So it's going to be, it's fully transparent. These are the criteria we're applying. Yeah. This is what you have. We need to see the new numbers coming that reflect these choices. Yeah. And we will apply this process. We're hoping through the course of the project. So generally the right big risks right now in terms of these decisions are early on. And then as we get closer to financial close, to get to this refinement process is now getting to the place where we have a clear sense of how the project's gonna shape up. Once you get into construction, this wouldn't really apply. There's some extreme, there could be the extreme of say Corona and no construction projects are happening, no construction sites. So I don't wanna, who knew we would have to think about these kind of extreme measures at that time. But we're at least just trying to create a transparent process for folks to come in. And yes, we have to weigh them one at a time and see what else is happening with the other projects to be able to make a fully informed recommendation to the director and to the commissioner in charge.
Okay, thank you. That's super helpful. I really appreciate it. And I do feel like this is fairly transparent and clear. So thank you for that. I don't have any more questions.
Thanks, Annalise. We will go to Susan. Susan.
It seemed, when I read this in the packet, it seemed to me
that it was in response to some of our questions at the February meeting where we said, how are you going to make a decision about remaining funding if projects need more subsidy? And it seemed to me this was a very coherent response to that as a follow-up. Is that right? I mean, we were asking questions like that about this at our last bond oversight, and these seem really clear to me. I agree with Annalise. They seem very transparent, and so I appreciate seeing them and hearing how it goes, the process.
Yeah, this is definitely in response to your oversight committee role, as you guys are keeping us accountable for tracking these projects and understanding any kind of cost differentials and really unit differentials. It's a big part of what we're what we are really, really, really tracking really carefully. And so these are and we're also really interested in seeing where we could see some efficiency. So sometimes when you get to density and scale, you will see efficiencies in construction costs and also operating costs, so both. So we're really understanding that our bond subsidy is just one of a few different sources of the project, but we're wanting to be clear with the public that this is the lens that we will apply to each request. And obviously if a project comes in and hits all four of these criteria, that's gonna be really compelling. And there we actually have, you will see, I'll put it this way. Some of the questions you had in February, we're seeing now today of projects coming in and putting, thinking about some what their project could look like if they had some like better housing by design opportunities. And we have, we'll hear a little bit from Powell in just a few minutes about how they were able to increase the bond goals because of a feasibility issue as well. So it was, we want to put this out here so we can be responsive in real time to projects as they undertake these big design decisions right now.
So in terms of timing, as you said, once they get into construction, this kind of goes away, really. So it's probably, this is a process that's going to continue this year. And as projects go into construction, then this will be finished, this part of the, okay.
Yep.
That's helpful, thank you.
Excellent, great comment. Thank you, Molly, very well presented. Anything else we need to know about this?
Our plan is to review each of these and update you at the next quarterly meeting of any time we make or approve any of these requests. And you'll see that reflected on the dashboard and on the expenditure report. And of course, we're hoping to get those projects in to present to you so you get to see the real effect of these very dynamic and very changing projects and how we're trying to be responsive to those, to their needs.
Thank you, Molly, I appreciate it. This is running incredibly smooth. We are literally spot on time as we are moving through. So this is tremendous. We are now going to go to
how good Dr. Holt is.
Thanks, Alan. We are going to go to project updates, which are exactly about 30th and Powell and the Home Forward Partnership. So project team, I don't know who I'm kicking it to, but I'm kicking it to you. Please make sure to announce yourself.
Hi, this is Amanda Saul from Home Forward. I'm joined by Julie Livingston and Ben Loftus, who are part of the Powell team. As everybody knows, I'm working from home and my dog might bark and my teenage son might walk through. So I'm just going to try to keep talking. And then the other thing I'll say, I realize this is the first time I'm giving a presentation over a video conference. I'm going to be looking at my slides with my notes in them, so I won't be able to see all of you for while I'm presenting. And I'll ask Tanya to change the slides for you. And then we'll take questions at the end if that works for everybody.
Sounds great.
Great.
And we fully understand.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, Tanya. Yep, there you go. Thanks. Sorry, hold on just a moment while I... Great, okay. Well, as I said, I'm Amanda Saul from Home Forward, and we're here today to update you on the Powell Project, which is located at 30th and Southeast Powell. As I'm sure you remember, it was one of the first sites that was purchased by PHB for a bond project. And a lot of what Tanya talked about really applies to this project, and we'll get into that a little bit more. So our overall project has, Tanya, next slide. Thanks. Our overall project has increased in size, and we'll talk more about that later, which allowed us the opportunity to increase the number of units and have a better project overall. As you can see from the chart above, the unit count has increased from 180 units to 210 units. And the project continues to meet all of the bond goals. Our service partnerships are still yet to be determined, but our priority is to serve homeless families in our 30 PSH units. And we hope to collaborate with a culturally appropriate service provider so we can target families of color for those 30 units. Next slide, please. Our funding sources include Portland housing bonds, non-competitive 4% tax credits, a permanent loan, and deferred developer fee from Home Forward. We have no gaps in funding and anticipate closing and construction start in June of 2021. Obviously, this may change based on the current COVID-19 emergency, but we hope, since our closing is over a year away, that we will be able to stay on track. Luckily, our design partners are able to continue work during this time. So we'll continue design. The Portland Housing Bond funding is leveraged over 2.5 times with other resources. Next slide. We have selected Holst Architecture and Colas Construction for our project team. At PHB's request, Holst initially did a full feasibility study to consider alternative building methods and determined that traditional stick-built construction is still the most cost-effective. Next, we went through a schematic design process on the original site. And since the site has expanded, we are currently redoing schematic design and expect to be done at the end of May. As you'll see in a few slides, we've expanded the site to include the adjacent 1.3-acre parcel, which has allowed us to increase the number of units by 30, increase the amount of outdoor space and surface parking, while simultaneously holding construction costs neutral. We will continue to work with Holst and Colas on design, and our first cost estimate with the new configuration is planned for June. And our goal is to submit building plans for permits in January of 2021. Next slide, please. The expanded site has allowed the site to function much better. It allows for on-site surface parking that is accessed off 31st Ave and is much more cost-effective. It eliminates the need for an expensive road on a very steep slope and helps to address the multiple easements that burden the site, including an access easement benefiting the site to the south, And the address of that site is 3032. The other major change is removing parking from within the building, which reduces the need for a concrete podium. And that allows the building to be all wood frame construction. And it sort of allows the building to be expanded, squished out a little bit. That then allows the building to go from 5 stories to 4 stories, which substantially reduces costs. Next slide. This is a site plan which really gives you an idea of all of those changes that I've been talking about. The blue portion is the original 3000 Southeast Powell site that was purchased by PHB. The yellow portion is a portion of the 3032 Southeast Powell site that will be added to the blue portion and will be part of the overall Powell project. As you can see, the building is sort of able to sort of expand onto the yellow portion, and then there's surface parking on the yellow portion, and it provides a lot more outdoor space. It also allows residents to access that parking off of 31st Ave, which is in the bottom left of the site plan. The other benefit of this is it means we don't have to build 30th Avenue on the most sloping part of the site, but it does allow for a pedestrian access way across the site. The orange or the southernmost portion and the yellow portion were both purchased with non-bond resources. And the orange portion will be used for future development opportunities and will be owned by PHB. Next slide. Just a few updates on our DMW ESB. Home Forward has had an equity goal of 20% for hard and soft costs since 2002. And we regularly exceed those goals by working closely with our contractors and procurement department and tracking progress during construction and making changes as needed. You may notice that our DMWSB goal is different from the other BOSS projects at 26%. And this is because we started work on the Powell project in 2018 and used Portland Housing Bureau's DMWESB goal that was in place at that time, which was 26%. We hope to exceed this goal, and we'll know more once the documents are released for bid in early 2021. Another thing that we think about is how to incorporate equity goals into our leasing process. And because we're in the process of that right now, I thought I would share a little bit of information about our project called Louisa Flowers. It's a 240-unit project in the Lloyd District that is currently leasing up. And we added what we call an ambassador position at the property. An ambassador position at the property management company that serves just this property. And it allows that person to do more outreach and follow up with potential residents. And because of this position, we've seen some really great results, and I thought I'd share those results for the demographics for the first 109 units that have been filled at the Louisa Flowers. So we're not done yet, but we're almost halfway through. And the demographics are 33% Caucasian, 38% African American, 7% Latino or Hispanic, and 15% all others, and 7% non-disclosed. If funding allows, we hope to use the same method at Powell. Great, next slide. So in review, The original site, as we got further and further into design and due diligence, we realized was burdened with complex easements that were expensive and time-consuming to resolve, some slope issues, some contamination issues, and Home Forward and PHB agreed that expanding the site in order to resolve these issues really helped to create a better project overall. Going forward, there are still some utility easements that will get resolved, that need to be completely resolved and will be resolved. And then I think we're all also worried about, you know, the financing and future tax credit pricing and how that will be affected by the COVID-19 emergency. So far at other sites that Home Forward has under construction, our contractors have continued to work in unoccupied units. And I guess I feel hopeful that because Powell is still 14 months away from starting construction, that it will give the economy, all of us, time to recover. And as I said earlier, design is able to continue during this time. City permitting could slow down the project and affect our schedule, but we'll continue to work through that with PHB's support. I'll just add that Home Forward has had several calls with lenders and investors lately, and most say that they're watching the market closely but are still investing and lending to affordable housing projects. And as a housing authority, we also benefit from additional HUD funding that has been promised. So we are just going to keep this project and all of our other projects moving forward, and hope for the best and adjust as needed. So thank you for your time. I'm gonna go back to my screen so I can see all of you, and Julie and Ben and I will answer any questions that you have. Thank you.
Thanks, Amanda. Great. Appreciate it. We're going to begin with you, Annalise. Any comments, questions?
No, thank you so much, Amanda. This was great. I do not have any questions for you. This was thorough. And I appreciate being able to dive a little bit more deeply into some of the projects.
Thank you. Susan.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's a very thorough presentation. I don't have any questions either, and best of luck with all this.
Alan.
Thanks, Dr. Holt. Thanks, Amanda. This is fantastic. I think the expansion of the site is so exciting and really seemed to open up some opportunities. Since this is kind of the furthest along in the cycle of especially new development, it raised a curiosity for me around parking and what our obligations are with regard to parking and affordable housing developments, right, for nonprofit housing developers, especially with a development that's on Powell that has a frequent bus route, I think. So can you walk us through kind of what the requirements are in parking? Did any of that change under Better Housing by Design? Is there a difference for nonprofit developers? I'm remembering some of that, but and then how those decisions get made in a project like this.
I'm going to hand that over to Julie Livingston, and I know she can answer it much better than I can.
Hi, thanks, Amanda, and thanks for the question, Alan. A person from PHB staff who may be working very closely with the Bureau of Development Services may have a more detailed response for you than I do. Certainly parking is driven by the base zone and proximity to transit options. You are absolutely right. And on Powell, we do have a frequent service. And as a result, there is no requirement in the Portland Zoning Code for there to be any off-street parking provided. That said, the street grid, it breaks down a little bit around Powell, and there are not great north-south street connections. And so folks who live in the Powell building that do have automobiles may find themselves walking quite a distance to reach their car parked on a street if we don't provide any parking. And so the design team, as we've been working through site planning, is very focused on how many spaces we can provide. And is there a way to set spaces aside for the family housing units, especially the three-bedroom units where we know there will be kids, and to make it easier on the larger households that are living in the building. So that's our goal right now, and figuring out a good metric for how many parking spaces we provide and which households they are available to is really kind of our concern today.
Thank you. Yeah, I knew that. I thought that that might be the case with the parking, but obviously there's a lot that goes into that calculation. I'm assuming part of that calculation also is cost, right? I'm assuming it costs us quite a bit more to build units because that's the trade-off than it does to build parking spaces at this point. So
That's absolutely true. And you know, in many neighborhoods, the pushback will always be that there is more desire for parking, so that there is less demand on the on-street spaces. Our conversations with the Creston Kenilworth Neighborhood Association, Richmond, Hosford, Abernethy, people want housing. Everybody values the housing and realizes that it is more important to have more housing units long-term than it is to have parking spaces. So the neighborhood, this neighborhood, is especially willing to forego some of the parking ease that they might currently be experiencing in order to get more housing units in the building.
But now that we own the land underneath, that could also come later. And yeah, I really like the consideration around accessibility to on-street parking as a factor. That does seem problematic at that particular site if I'm thinking about what's around there. But maybe someday that'll change. Thank you.
Great presentation. Thank you, Amanda. Are there any other questions for the team? Julie, good to see you. All right, wonderful. We are 3 minutes ahead of time. Let's go to our public testimony moment. And just by way of reminder for those who may want to chat, as you can see on the screen, hopefully you can see on the screen, that there is a time limit, but submit your chat via or submit your thought via chat. And so I will do my best to capture what we have. Oh, it's from Jessica to everyone. If you're going to participate, you will see the raised hand. If you have a chat option at the bottom of your screen. To chat, as you can see on the screen, hopefully you can see, if you're looking at your screen, at the bottom of the screen, there's a chat feature. You would click on that and then add your chat into that section. It will then begin to highlight, and I will do my best to pull up the highlight. Any comments, any chats from those who joined us today? I'll give everyone an opportunity. This is part of our new normal, making the adjustment to function through a medium that we're not necessarily familiar with, but give us a month and we're going to all be experts. It's the other thing about this whole media world that even 30 seconds of silence can feel like an eternity while we're waiting. So I want to give people just a few moments to kind of work through what they may need to. And if not, then we will move forward. Oh, there was a request. Please type your name if you would like to sign up for public comment. Yeah, we would need your name as well.
Hello, this is Michelle Holm. I'm providing support in the background. In case someone is only on the phone, we can unmute the phone-only attendees just to make sure they are able to sign up for public comment if they are unable to type.
Michelle, how would you like to go about that?
We will go through each of the phone-only participants. We only have less than a handful. And just check. We'll unmute you and let us know if you would like to sign up. Please let us know your name. Okay. I've unmuted the only three phone numbers I see. Everybody else, let me know. Please sign up in the chat if you would like to speak.
Well, it doesn't appear that we have any voices or typers who want to engage at this moment. To that effect, then, let me say thanks to everyone who presented. Appreciate PHB staff. Thank you, Bond Oversight Committee, for your time today. Thank you, Home Forward, for your work on this project as we keep moving forward. COVID-19 has changed our world to some degree, but one of the things that's super exciting is that we still have an opportunity to move forward to address this very pressing issue and provide real solutions for real problems around housing. So thanks for all the work you're doing. Thanks for the energy that you put forward in this. Director Callahan, you've been extremely silent today, and want to always give you an opportunity to say something. You're muted.
Good morning, everybody. I was just trying to use my chat feature to thank everybody for their participation, especially to our Bond Oversight Committee members for using this new technology with us, and to the team at Home Forward for presenting such a great virtual presentation. This was our very first public committee meeting that we have done at the Housing Bureau since going into a complete virtual world. And I think it was a very productive meeting, and also thanks to all the PHB staff who joined today to help us make sure that we knew what we were doing. And Dr. Holt, thank you to you as well.
My delight, appreciate it. Everyone have an incredible Monday. May your day be incredibly productive as you go from GoToMeeting to Zoom meeting to Skype to phone conference the rest of your day. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.